Welcome back, folks, to episode 66 of the Running Man Self-Regulation Skills and Self-Improvement Project podcast with me, your host, Dr. Armando Dominguez, PhD in health psychology, licensed professional counselor, and an adjunct professor at a local community college. What we're going to be discussing today has to do with honesty, dishonesty, or amygdala, fear, boundaries, and habituation. And all those things may sound like a lot, but they're actually very closely tied together. And we will start with the idea of honesty and dishonesty and how it physiologically impacts our body and how we go about doing our days and what actually encourages us to be dishonest, to make us more apt to lie or do something that is against our ethical or moral principle. And this is where we're going to start our discussion today. So whenever we're discussing the idea of being dishonest, often we have to look at the idea of lying, dishonesty, and what we often, in the common colloquial, will say to each other and even to ourselves, it was just a little white lie. I just told a little white lie. And sometimes we may elevate that idea to a point of ethic and moral to where we're saving somebody's feelings and emotions. And I'm not going to say that one should never do that, but I am saying that there is a process that goes on with that, that often we try to save someone's feelings, and if they're little or they're young, and if it would be hurtful otherwise, sometimes it's best not to say anything. That's understandable within the social scheme. Absolutely cool. But what we're pointing out today is the dynamic thing that occurs within us at the brain level, the physiological level that's actually been measured by fMRI. Whenever we are being dishonest, and whenever we're more apt to be dishonest because we do things that may be dishonest with a frequency above once, then we have a practice effect. Some don't like to acknowledge the idea that anything that we gain that is negative and repeated is somehow practiced. We say that it's an addiction, we become dependent, and we often hear the terms repetition and practice with skill building, like in sports, or becoming skillful at something that is honorable, such as working at woodwork or painting or even guitar playing or music, things that require repetition that have, in our own social sense, a value that is appreciated by others and that will paint the practitioner or the person that's gaining skill in a more positive light. So there is definitely social value or social currency that occurs as a result of things whenever we're practicing. But just as much as whenever we do something that could be potentially addictive or damaging to us, the more often we do it, the more practiced we become, so to speak. And that also means we become more skillful. And that also means that those things tend to happen more easily if we do them often enough, to where it becomes second nature. And that means it becomes so natural that it's like pouring water. It's too easy and it's hard to stop at that point. So these are some ideas that we need to entertain when we're thinking about dishonesty. Now, I know there's some philosophical purists out there that'll say that you should never lie no matter what. And whenever you shift the paradigm, the hypothetical paradigm, to one where there could be danger to another, well, you should just tell the truth anyway. Well, that means that at some point, everyone has a price. And if someone says such things, then that means that you don't have a problem splitting the difference. That means there's a trade-off. There are certain things in our lives that we cannot trade off. Now, if you want to get a little more deeply into this idea, the author Chris Voss, former FBI negotiator, wrote the book Never Split the Difference, and tell you what, driving the point home, the audiobook's incredible, by the way. And whenever we think about splitting the difference in the business deal, that means some money goes left, some money goes right. May not be perfect, but whoever gains the advantage gets the most, but there's also going to be some loss during the interaction, which means it comes out in the wash, they say. When it comes to human life and human health, not so much. So what does honesty and dishonesty have to do with this? Well, whenever we're talking about the selfless lie, maybe saving somebody's life by saying you didn't see them. And historically, one of the most important and well-documented of these selfless lives were the people that kept Anne Frank and her family hidden. No, we're not hiding Jewish people in Germany during World War II, whenever they were going and taking people to Auschwitz and the camps, so to speak, and killing them. So whenever we're talking about actual paradigms where things situationally require that, we're probably more apt to do that if we can protect them. And that also puts the individual that is being dishonest at risk. So we're talking about character and higher principle that become some abstract things that we really must engage and embrace to think about such things. But just to put things in perspective, what is actually going on whenever we decide to be dishonest? It's not anything we have to learn in the sense that somebody teaches us. Somebody can, however, teach you how to do it. And sometimes it's by modeling, by seeing people doing these things, and then they explain to us that, well, this is just kind of how things go. And we may accept it as sacrosanct and don't question if we learn it young enough from somebody that we care about, that is influential enough that we don't question them, like at the hands and feet of a mom or a dad or an uncle or auntie or somebody that's doing something that when we look back, we realize, wow, that was stealing. That wasn't right. That's not okay. And it's applying advantage, a survival advantage. But whenever we were cave people a long time ago, and whenever you see even simpler creatures such as chimpanzees and other little animals that are not necessarily simian, but rather instead of these little proto-human types, we're looking at creatures that have a survival advantage by stowing and stashing things away. Nature teaches us to be dishonest, and it's called camouflage. Camouflage increases survival. Camouflage means you don't look like what you really are, and it gives you an opportunity to be not eaten. That's a good thing. Let's not be on the menu. And even at the insect level, we see this. One of the things that I saw that was absolutely incredibly fascinating was a little jumping spider. And the saw today class of little hairy spiders that look like miniature tarantulas, they don't grow very large, but they're known for jumping. Saltar in Spanish means to jump, for those that are not speaking, folks out there Spanish speaking, but those that speak Latin or read Latin understand that saltidae is the group. But the reason I make this point is that I remember becoming fascinated by this one little spider, and there was also a group of other insects, that's an arachnid, by the way, insects that were moths, and they actually had what would look like misshapen wings, but they resembled bird feces, little bird droppings. They were the same color and shape for the most part, but they could fly. But this hid them and kept them from being eaten because the birds would not eat their own fecal matter. So therefore, if they looked like the fecal matter, they were less apt to be eaten. So these are some incredible stories about dishonesty. Natural occurring dishonesty called camouflage that increases survival. So in the perspective of survival advantage, developing survival advantage, maintaining advantage, meaning you keep more food for yourself, also put yourself in a position where you're less apt to be seen. Sometimes camouflage is a simple thing, wherever it's your coloring by being really still. And whenever the predators go running by you, they run by you because they're really tuned into motion. But whenever you're still, you become kind of part of the environment. Therefore, they have a blind spot in that area. If you're not wiggling and moving and running, then you're harder to see. And they may not have the aptitude to smell you at high speeds or might run by you whenever they're really trying to track you. And predators with their eyes scent usually see color and depth, but aren't really good at catching motion at high speed. And those are some things that are very similar to what we do. So what does this have to do with lying and dishonesty? In the social sense, as human beings, as people that interact, whenever we experience dishonesty, we tend to get a little upset whenever it's directed at us or something says something about us that is not necessarily true, because we have bad feelings as a result of our image, our self-image being damaged, but also what we would perceive as the image that people hold of us, how they see us, what they believe us to be. Mind you, I'm saying belief with emphasis in quotes, because we're going to get back to the belief quality as well. But also realizing that may or may not impact how we interact or if we're accepted. Whereas a long time ago, if we were cave people and we were hunter-gatherers or even running around doing a nomadic lifestyle, and you get kicked out of the tribe because somebody finds you unpopular and someone says you don't smell good, and second that they might even say that you're eating too much or maybe you're not doing enough, and if people believe it, if they get on the bandwagon because of influence, then your survivability just went down. Now you're feed for the coyotes, you're feed for the jackals if you're out in the Middle East, you're feed for the lions if you're out in Africa. That is not a good thing. So we do have some inherent biases towards not being accepted. And we want to be accepted, and sometimes that even includes making ourselves appear as if we're more than, better than, or actually are the things that we're saying, even though maybe we're not. So social camouflage exists. So is a lie social camouflage? It can be. A lie can also be a weapon and damaging to someone else's not only reputation, but their physicality. Because if you say something that may be dishonest to somebody that may be easily swayed or influenced, and yet they get emotional and physically act out as a result, it could be very dangerous. People could die as a result of that. So now that we've put things in context as far as the social aspect and how far it goes into the animal kingdom, and it goes much further, of course, but this is just a snippet, just a quick bird's eye view, and also making a bridge so that we can make the jump into, well, what actually happens when we as people, as human beings, are dishonest. According to the fMRI imaging that we've done in many studies, we realize that whenever we're saying things that are dishonest, we initially, at the very first part, we do have an apprehension to being dishonest if we have ethics and morals or taboos against such things. There are some things that make us feel fear because whenever we were conditioned or taught, possibly, or maybe even saw and emulated as a result of social learning by observation, vicarious learning, like Bandura talked about, we may have picked up on the idea and figured out that, oh, this is bad. We can't do that. That's not allowed. We start seeing that there are certain behaviors that are taboo, certain things that are against our social mores, that are against the folk ways within smaller related groups that aren't accepted, like if you were in Appalachia versus South Texas versus out on the West Coast in California and Oregon. We all have different folk ways that are observed that are kind of cultural, but they're definitely faux pas if you do them, not necessarily absolute no-nos, but then there may be certain things that are just absolute no. And we have to recognize those things, and there is a quality of fear that goes with them. Now, the fMRI realized for us, when we were actually imaged, and we realize as a result of the imaging that our amygdala wakes up whenever we are dishonest. That means that there is a physical, measurable sense of activation in our brain, in the structure in our brain that says fear. And it implies that maybe we shouldn't do this, and it wakes us up and makes us more aroused to the level of activity or thought process because there is danger here. And that could be even the implied loss of social support and acceptance that could result in the death of an individual. But these are things that aren't thought out in the higher cognitive, heady sense that we just did right now by saying it, but are worked out within fractions of a moment, literally thousands of a second. So incredibly fast. So they're very subconscious and pre-verbal, and at that liminal edge wherever we start seeing our behavior managed, we realize that maybe we don't have quite the amount of free will that we thought because we're being shaped by those things that we may fear and expect and possibly predict in our own minds, and it could still be at the nonverbal higher thinking level. Not higher thinking, but the lower thinking level, the lower brain level that has to do with immediate survival. And that's very important to realize before it ever splits off as a signal to our higher brain, where we have the ethic and moral and guidelines and recognition of such things. The important thing here is to recognize what science has been showing us, and that not only the amygdala grows, but the activation of it as a result of being dishonest and the apprehension that occurs, knowing what we're doing intentionally is somehow wrong or not accepted. This is very important. So what happens after we've lied the first time? Let's say we're needing to lie again. Well, we'll describe this in a little bit, but to make the point, they did a study where there were two friends, two females, and in the college they had each of them have pictures of jars with money in them on their computer screens, but they were in separate rooms. They were able to communicate to each other verbally, and I believe it was some electronic communication, but the people that were doing the study were telling each one of them something different. One was shown a very fuzzy picture, so they had to kind of guesstimate how much money was in the jar. The other had a much more clear picture that kind of indicated how much money was in the jar, but the compatriots within the study, the Confederates of the people that were doing the study, would talk to each one of them, tell each one of them this. The first one was told that if she was able to guess how much money was in the jar, she'd be able to get paid pretty well. And the other one was told that if the other person was told how much money was in the, not told how much money, but rather overestimated how much money was in the jar and got the person to overestimate what her reports were as what she thought was in the jar money-wise, that she would get paid. But if the girl that was seeing the fuzzy picture was being told correctly and accurately what she got and she got the money, she would get paid the most from either one of them. So the way the study went down, the person that had the clearer picture was encouraged to tell the other person. Now, they weren't told to lie, but she was telling the other person to prevent her from winning how much money was in it by saying it was an excess amount versus what was actually in there, and trying to get her to overestimate, because if she overestimated, the person that was being dishonest and telling her it was more than what it actually was would get the money. Even though it wasn't laid out that way, this young lady at first was being dishonest by only a few pence, since it was done in the UK, so that would equate to pennies, and then later became more extravagant and larger in number, which means she was motivated to benefit herself so that she could win by getting the other person to be inaccurate. So this is where I said earlier that we all have a price in a sense. Whenever it comes to human life, are we willing to make a trade-off like that for a certain amount of money? Now, this came out of a book, and it's a rather fascinating book, and they set down some paradigms that were really kind of uncomfortable to think about, but it put things in perspective. And whenever the researchers were looking at this, they were looking at things that one would do. What negative or heinous thing would one be willing to do for money, for a large sum of money? And how much money would it take for you to break that rule? How much would you have to be paid, for instance, to burn your nation's flag was one. Another was, how much would you have to be paid to kick a dog in the head? Hard. How much would you have to be paid to slap your mother in the face? Now, these seem really, really ugly, and of course, you know, don't want to do those things. But the idea is to show us that there is a price on things, and sometimes we're willing to make those adjustments and adjudications to wherever we would go against our ethics and morals. Now that we've laid that as foundation, going back to what I asked earlier, what are we willing to do when we lie? Well, that all depends on what the motivation is, but what happens in our brain? Well, apparently the very first time that we're being dishonest, we have more resistance and possible apprehension and fear. Our amygdala wakes up. Once we start doing this with a sense of frequency because of expediency or efficiency, you're trying not to waste time and save energy. Because we're human, we try to save energy and be efficient anyway. Not that it makes it okay, but notice how I'm saying it with an inflection, so as to kind of tie it into, well, it's kind of like a white lie, it's really not so bad. But what happens is you do it more often and the amygdala fires less. That means that we have less fear response, less palpable, physical, measurable fear response. So the more often you're dishonest, the more practiced you get at it, more skilled you get at it. But not only that, our resistance to doing the wrong thing, it goes down. Some would say that we become insensitive or conditioned to it, or we become callous that sort of thing, and that may be part of it, and those are some apt descriptions, so to speak. But the fact is that we do something that is negative in that sense, where we're willing to lie to gain advantage, or willing to lie to do something that'll benefit me lots of money for doing something that otherwise is going to be breaking my ethic and moral guidelines, then we start seeing that there's a quality of belief that goes along with our folk ways, our mores, our ethics, and our morals, and our philosophies. They're ideas. Doesn't mean that they don't exist, or that they don't serve, or that they're not useful. Not saying that at all. That's why I'm defining and separating. But we have to recognize that with practice, we become more apt to be able to do something because there's less resistance at the physiological level, that is a fear-based response that keeps us safe. Don't touch the hot water. Do it often enough, and there's money in there. You might run the risk of burning yourself to get that gold piece out of the pot when it's boiling. Good God, who would do that, right? Well, we're looking at these kind of paradigms because we can't override what our brain does for our best benefit, even if it's those things that we learned in a social sense. Don't do this, don't do that. And those things keep you safe. It's whenever we're unaware that we become more apt to become vulnerable, not only to our environment, but also to the influence that people may ply on us, not knowing better, or by plying it from a perspective of, you're going to lose the love and accept you, or we're going to kick you out of the group. And those are huge motivators, but also very powerful influences that we have to keep in mind. Now, this was a pretty loaded subject today, and I really wanted to touch upon this because there's so much that stems from this fear response, having to do with not only honesty, what it feels like when we're honest, so easy, versus dishonest, not as easy. And then what happens when we're dishonest frequently? Well, our resistance to doing those things goes down. We become practiced. And then we become less apt to question those things that would otherwise be immoral or unethical or possibly even dangerous in lieu of what we could call a payoff or a survival advantage. Not just mere advantage, but survival advantage if we really look at it in the bigger picture sense. Now, that's it for now. Certainly been good talking to you this Thursday evening. It's been a long day, but I'm happy to be here talking to you. And I just want to tell you thank you for listening. And for those of you that get on YouTube, the Running Man podcast is on YouTube. And there are some mini lectures, video lectures that I put up there that I had shared with my students that I'd recorded during COVID there. And there are other projects I'm working on towards this podcast as well. And I will let y'all know when those come out. But other than that, I certainly have enjoyed discussing this topic with you. If you have any feedback or just want to reach out and say hello, please do. And send me an email at the Gmail that is runningmangetskillsproject@gmail.com. And I'd love to hear from you. Certainly look forward to hearing from you. I hope all are well. Take care. Be honest out there. And walk well.